Mind program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show, everybody. Today we have visiting with us Diana Jones. Diana Jones is one of the owners of the Jones Von Drell Vineyards and Winery located in Thurman, North Carolina. Diana, welcome to the radio show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I saw on your website that you are one of several owners of the Jones Von Drell Vineyards and Winery. Tell us about the other owners.
This is a family business, so myself and my husband, Chuck, are the Jones part, and my sister, Ronnie, and Raymond Von Drell are the Von Drell part.
Tell us about where you folks came from. What gave you the idea to start a vineyard and a winery?
All four of us are from North Carolina, grew up here. I'm not necessarily born here, but grew up here. Ronnie, Raymond, and I grew up in Hickory. Chuck grew up in Asheville, went to Asheville High School before it was Asheville High School. But Chuck and I have lived all over the country, including 4 years in California. We did not wake up one morning after the kids left and said, oh, let's plant a vineyard today. No, a lot of thought was put into this. We spent 4 years in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Chuck was building a wireless system through the state. Got the chance to meet a lot of the owners of vineyards, saw the process. He was building sites on their property, and loved it. That was back in the mid-80s and has been studying this since then. It's been a long process.
Where did you actually start to say, we're going to have a vineyard here?
When we left California, we moved to Roswell, Georgia, where Chuck started his own company, built wireless systems throughout the world. And we actually planted a small vineyard in Roswell, Georgia. This was a vinifera vineyard. Vinifera aren't great choices for Roswell, Georgia. But it was definitely a learning process, made hobby wine. And as the kids grew up, I mean, we've always loved North Carolina, wanted to come back to North Carolina. And the thought of doing this really started many, many years ago. Our youngest daughter went to Elon University, and we started seriously thinking about this, doing a lot of research, studying areas, soil types, wind, climate, you know, all the things that are important to having a vineyard. We settled on where we are in the very top of the Yakin Valley.
Very, very interesting. So you started off as sort of hobby winemakers in the beginning. Growing a couple grapes in the backyard, is it?
Well, more than a couple, but not nearly what we have now as a 30-acre vineyard.
I can't tell you the number of people we've had on a radio show who have, let's see, we'll call it a hobby that's out of control.
Well, that's what I tell people. I say, be careful where your hobbies take you.
Well, I know from looking at your business card that you're located in Thurman, North Carolina. For those people on the radio who don't know exactly where that is, I think it's near Elkin, about 10 miles or so northwest of Elkin and north of Statesville on Interstate 77. Is that right?
It is. We are 10 miles northwest of Elkin, up Highway 21. We're the highest elevated planted vineyard in the Yadkin Valley. We sit at the base of the mountain that Roaring Gap sits on top of, about 10 minutes off the Blue Ridge Parkway.
And what's the elevation?
Between 15 and 1,600 feet.
Okay.
And we've just purchased land across the street from us that puts us at about 1,700 feet.
Tell me about how you found Thurman.
Well, again, we had done a lot of research, studying all those aspects that were important to us. We knew when we did this that we wanted to have as much control over the entire process as possible. We decided we were going to be an estate vineyard. We were not going to buy juice or fruit from anybody else. Our whole goal was to make great wine. And so we needed control over the process. The site was of maximum importance because we were going to be an estate vineyard. And we finally narrowed it down, looking at elevation, you know, reduce the chances of Pierce's disease, wind flow, climate, everything. We narrowed it down to an area of about 15 by 5 miles along the ridge from Devotion to Trap Hill, North Carolina. Did a lot of driving. Our daughter was a collegiate soccer player at Elon University, so we would come up here, watch her play, and start driving, visiting vineyards, and then going up to the area. One day, we went up to the area that we had already researched and narrowed down, and we made a wrong turn on Old Railroad Grade Road. And we drove down the road about 3/4 of a mile. Suddenly, Chuck slammed on the brakes, and he said, "Look at that." Before us was a huge expanse of land, pasture land, had cows on it, woods on it. And we stood there and talked for a few minutes, and he said, "That's what we need to find. Rolling hills, south-facing, everything we were looking for." We got back in the car, we drove a couple of hundred yards down the road, and there before us is a for sale sign.
Boy, talk about being serendipitous.
Yes, that's how we found that particular piece of property. But I always tell people, it's not like we were just out driving along and, oh, let's plant a vineyard and here it is. No, we did a lot of research that drew us to that area.
Well, I have to tell you, Diana, one of the biggest mistakes that people make is not doing sufficient research on the location and so forth for the vineyard beforehand. A number of my interviews on the radio program have been with these people, and one of the things said we should have spent more time either selecting soil locations or selecting varieties. But it sounds like you've done your homework well on that. Talk to us a little bit about the different varieties of grapes that you grow there.
We're still an experiment. I mean, we decided on 11 different varietals to start with. We grow whites, Petit Mensang, Chardonnay, and Viognier. And we grow Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Petit Verdot, Malbec, Grenache, Mourvèdre, and Tempranillo. We actually ended up with another white that was unexpected. So when we planted the vineyard within the Tempranillo, we discovered we had 25 white vines. As they grew, we realized. So obviously somebody from the nursery grabbed a wrong bunch. So they did well, and a couple of years we would harvest them and just kind of throw them in with everything else. But we decided to have a little bit of fun with it and figure out exactly what this was. One year we harvested it, kept it separate. We let our wine club members get involved in this, and everybody got to taste the wine that these grapes produced and take a guess as to what they were. Then we sent it off for DNA testing, and it came back 100% Sauvignon Blanc. So we have 25 Sauvignon Blanc vines.
Wow.
And we had a blast because it was a surprise to even us. And our viticulturist had worked with Sauvignon Blanc for years and years and years, so it was a surprise.
Well, I'm surprised because usually Sauvignon Blanc requires a cooler climate.
We have a microclimate area there. I mean, certainly we can get the really hot days during the summertime, depending on the season, but we get nice, cool nights, and the wind is always blowing, which I think is one of the huge aspects for that site. Chuck would come up here as the vines were developing the first few years, and he'd literally mow the vineyard at 3:00 in the morning. And he said it was just amazing to see how all of a sudden the wind just shifts. But the wind is always blowing up there, and it cools the fruit down. So we get hot days, good sugar development, cool nights for the grapes to rest and maintain their acidity. It's a great site.
Well, the wind also helps to keep the leaves dry.
Absolutely.
One of the things we have here, of course, typically looking out over this, sometimes we get out here in the morning and the fog is so thick, it's like you can't see the end of the row of vines from here. We're like in a cloud, and other days it's just down below, like we're just above it, and you can actually see the fog moving up and down the river valley here. But when the leaves get wet on our vineyard, it's like the water's dripping off
right.
The tips of leaves. It's like,
right.
Hey, disease, come and get me.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So the wind thing is a nice thing to have.
Well, and I mean, I really do think that is one of the most important aspects for our site because, as you said, you know, in our humid environment after a rainstorm, it dries the fruit out beautifully and the leaves. But in the wintertime, the cold air doesn't just sit there. That wind pushes it down through the vine. Mm. So in times when a lot of the vineyards around our area have been hit pretty hard, we haven't had as much damage. It doesn't mean we don't always get hit. Last year was a hard year. Our Cabernet Franc got hit a little bit last year. Mm. But it's just amazing. It's an amazing sight.
What's the coldest it ever gets there? Did you see single digits?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll get down into single digits.
Okay.
We haven't had that a whole lot, but
sure.
Yeah, we will. Yeah.
I think this winter we had maybe 2 days down in single digits here at 2,100 feet.
Yeah.
So most of the stuff you have there is relatively cold-hardy, then I take it.
Well, I mean, we haven't seen a whole lot of damage from cold. Again, I think that wind helps because it
yep.
doesn't just sit there.
Yep.
Well, I know from reading some things on your website, you had some interesting stories to tell about the soil that you have there. Tell us about the preparation of your vineyard soil.
We found this property in 2007, and 2008 was spent preparing the land and the soil and building the structure of the vineyard. And when we started working on the soil, we went down along each row and ripped it to a depth of about 3 feet, loosen up soil, you know, years of compaction from haying and pasturing and all that. We just discovered how much rock was in that soil. In fact, we were very careful about how we laid out the vines, and I mean, everything was laser shot, but we had to adjust a little bit because there were places we couldn't get through the rock. We had to purchase a piece of equipment constructed in New Zealand to pound our inposts in. They go down, they're extra tall, extra beefy impost, and they go down about 3 feet in the soil, and this post pounder had a lot of work to pound those in. And then we rented a piece of equipment from the DOT to pick up the rocks because there were so many boulders in the land. In fact, we just made the beginning of May, we had a big wine dinner, 140 person wine dinner up there for our grand opening re-celebration, annual celebration. They put the tent up and they, you know, put the spike in the ground and they couldn't even get it out.
I'm interested in about this these posts. How tall are these posts that you're driving around 3 feet?
10 feet tall.
That's not a standard 5 or 6 foot high trellis,
no.
Is it?
No. We have one of the highest canopies in North Carolina, if not the highest. And again, everything we did played on the natural attributes of the site, the wind. Our canopy goes up well over 8 feet tall during the growing season.
Eight feet?
Yeah. Now, we'll hedge the vines, but yeah, the canopy will go up over 8 feet tall. Our cordon wire is 42 inches off the ground compared to traditionally 36. Our wow. vines are 6 feet apart. We keep underneath the vines very clean. Again, we are looking for the wind flow because we think it reduces the chances of disease or, you know, the pressure from disease. We try to take what we have on that site and make the best use of it.
Well, folks, we've been talking today with Diana Jones, who's here in Marshall, North Carolina, for an interview with our radio station. We're going to take a break at this point in time, folks, so hang on. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper. Those of us who live in log homes or have old barns are familiar with the annual onslaught of swarms of carpenter bees here in the mountains. Those suckers are about the size of a small hummingbird and can cause a lot of damage to your wooden buildings. For you city folks, carpenter bees bore a half-inch diameter holes into the wood to lay their eggs. Some holes have been measured to be over 12 inches deep. They keep coming back year after year, too, to lay their eggs. And they keep drilling new holes. They can totally destroy the ability of a timber to hold up a roof section if they are not controlled. Carrie Caldwell lives back in Spring Creek in an old log barn that she remodeled into a living space for her family. It's a great old classic tobacco barn that she fixed up. Carrie noticed the carpenter bees begin swarming in it around her barn early spring that year. Carrie tried plugging the holes with wooden dowels. The carpenter bees just ate through them, going in and out at will. She tried using expansion foam to fill the holes. After it dried, the bees kept drilling through that too. While doing some research on the problem at the Madison County Library, she read that each carpenter bee was responsible for laying up to 60 eggs each season. She reckoned if she could kill the carpenter bee, she would prevent that new crop from hatching. She didn't like chemicals or poisons, so she thought of another idea. She would swat them as they hovered just in front of their holes just before going in to build a nest. She made a thin wooden paddle and nailed it to a short piece of old broken broomstick. Now she could swat the bees as they flew into and out of the holes during the nesting season. It proved to be an effective way to kill the carpenter bees. She killed over 50 the first day. She figured that prevented 3,000 eggs from being laid. At the end of the season, she had racked up over 185 bees. Next season, there were substantially fewer carpenter bees flying around, but she swatted them anyway. After the third year, hardly a one could be seen. I had Carrie make one for me, and I found it works very well in reducing the carpenter bee population around our farm buildings, as well as our house. Carrie now has her kids making the bee slappers to sell to make some extra money for their school supplies. Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper is another fine product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County. You can buy Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been visiting today with Diana Jones, who is one of the owners of the Jones Von Trail Vineyards and Winery out in Thurman, North Carolina. Just before the break, Diana, we were talking about some of the things going on in your vineyard out there, the unusual high trellises and the posts and the difficulties you've had putting that in. Let's talk a little bit more about the winemaking process just for a moment. Are you using a stainless steel or oak barrels for wines?
We use both. We have our reds are in oak, and we use French oak primarily. We're experimenting with a little bit of American and Hungarian oak, but the vast majority is French oak. Then we use stainless steel tanks for some of our whites and our rosés.
Oh, the rosés. What kind of rosé do you make?
We do a dry Provence-style rosé, 100% Grenache.
Old Grenache. I love Grenache.
Yes. And in fact, on that one, I guess the best compliment I've ever had on that wine, we had a visitor from France. She got a taste of that rosé and looked at me and said, I could be sitting in Paris drinking this rosé. And I said, well, that does it for me. And then our other rosé is a Mourvèdre, and it's a slightly sweet and slightly sparkling. It's the only wine that we do that has sweetness to it. We are a dry wine winery.
Classic European stuff from France.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about the newsletter that you have. How's that work, and what do you do with that?
Well, we are very careful about the amount of information we bombard people with. So our newsletter goes out several different times a year. To get on our newsletter, people simply go to our website and you know, sign up that way. And then when we send information out, we send it to people. It's telling people about events that are happening, what's going on, the stores that we're in now, because we're self-distributing in North Carolina, and we're literally covering the state from Fontana clear to the Outer Banks and down to Wilmington now. So they get, if they want to know where they can find our wines locally, they can, you know, check that out. But it's just an information tool. We use it with our wine club members and, you know, just try to fill people in on what's happening at Jones Von Trail.
Okay, is this a weekly, a monthly, a quarterly?
Probably closer to quarterly.
Okay.
I noticed on your website you also have a cellar club. Tell us about that.
Our cellar club members are very important to us because not only do they, you know, purchase wine on a regular basis, but they become great advocates for who we are and what we're doing. Our cellar club is free to join. People receive a discount on their wines, and we do two shipments or pickups a year, one in June, which we just had last Sunday. We had over 400 people at the winery.
Wow.
And we do really lovely events on cellar club pickup days, and then one in November. And then we also ship wine if people prefer to have it that way. They get some selection. They can choose a mixed case, or they can choose all red or all white, and then we set the wines within those selections.
Okay.
What's your total production at the winery?
Probably close to about 6,500 cases a year. It varies depending on the year.
Sure.
Are you having any plans to increase that, or is that where you're going to be?
Well, that's where we're going to be right now.
Okay. And that's with 30 acres?
That's with 30 acres. You know, our grand opening was May of 2014, so we're still very young.
Well, being young is good. That means you've got lots of learning ahead and lots of room for improvement, usually. We have the same problem here. We have a young vineyard, and so it's a steep learning curve.
Well, we started the vineyard first because we didn't buy juice or fruit from anybody in the time that the vineyard was developing. So we're actually working on our ninth year fruit this year.
Mm.
On our first vintage, though, in 2012, the wines picked up, I guess, over 100 international awards. So we're pretty excited about what's happening up there.
Wow.
I mean, we have a great winemaker, and we have a great site. And as Dan reminds me, I posted a picture on Facebook yesterday, winemaking starts in the vineyard.
Actually, it starts right there in the dirt.
That's right.
We have a lot of people who come here, and they take a look at this red clay and say, how can you graze grapes in this? Well, the red clay here has a unique characteristic of having all kinds of trace elements that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's very available. It holds water better, so it's better for drought-resistant grapes here. So there's a lot of fun things you have with hard red clay, but you got to know how to play with it. So everything starts in the dirt. If you don't have good dirt, you can't have good vines. Without good vines, you don't have good grapes. And without good grapes, you don't have good wine.
That's exactly right.
And I don't care what anybody says, and you know well, you can't make good wine from crappy grapes.
Nope.
Can't be
nope.
done. And speaking of making wine, who's your winemaker there?
Dan Tallman is our winemaker.
Where'd he come from?
Well, originally, he grew up in Oregon, but he worked in Sonoma for most of his winemaking years. He's been in the business about 35 years. Mm. He is a graduate of UC Davis and worked at places such as Simi, Matanzas Creek, Clos du Bois, Williams-Selim. He worked with Mary Edwards, Zelma Long, Paul Hobbs. So he comes to us with great experience. I guess probably in the 90s, Dan decided he wanted to have a farm. And so he started looking outside the state of California. Land there is quite expensive. He found a farm in Virginia. And at the same time, Chateau Morissette was looking for a winemaker. So Dan was the winemaker at Chateau Morissette for a time. Then he came to North Carolina, and Dan actually came to us. We didn't know Dan. I guess he had driven by the vineyard, loved what he saw, heard that we were going to be an estate vineyard. He called Chuck one day and he said, "You're ready for a winemaker yet?" Chuck said, "Well, not really. We don't even have the winery completed or anything yet. But send me your resume." And so Dan sent him his resume, and Chuck opened it up and went, "Oh my goodness, let's have lunch tomorrow." So we hired him immediately. He came to us before we finished, so, you know, helped with, you know, what do you need in the lab? What's gonna work for you here?
Sure.
And so it's great. He's been with us since then.
Sounds like I had a real winner there with Dan.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you've met Dan Tallman, and he's the winemaker there. 35 years of good experience bringing to your front porch. I think it's fantastic. Well, let's talk just a little bit about how we can find you folks and where we can go to taste your wonderful wines, how we can find them anywhere there is to be had, and how do we contact you?
You can find us. You can put us in your GPS. We are about an hour north of Charlotte, an hour and a half north of Charlotte, depending on where you are, an hour northwest of Winston-Salem, 2 hours and 15 minutes from Asheville. I'm the one traveling the state of North Carolina, so I can tell you exactly how long it takes to get everywhere. I think in 2 years I've put about 130,000 miles on my car.
Wow.
So, we are working hard to get our wines out to the, you know, stores and restaurants around the state.
I did notice a little unusual thing that you have a lot of wine distribution going on through the restaurants in this region, as well as a couple of the wine shops.
Yes.
And this is from the self-distributing thing that you decided to do?
It is.
Why did you decide to do that and go that route?
A couple of different reasons. Number one, we're young. We're building a brand from scratch. Nobody knows or sells your product like you do. Mm-hmm. We want the people that we sell our product with to know who we are and what we're doing, and to form some relationships with those people. It makes a difference in, you know, how your wines sell at different places. We want them to be excited about what they're hearing about what can happen in North Carolina. And we want to know who we're selling to. Also, you know, we can give them a better price, obviously, if we're self-distributing versus going through a distributor.
Does that require a separate kind of licensing?
The state of North Carolina, the legislature, determined, I don't know how many years ago now, that if you're a farm winery, you can self-distribute. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I know we have on our docket for the future programs to do some interviews with some of the wine distributors, so that'll be interesting to listen about that. Okay, so how do we find you?
Well, we are at 964 Old Railroad Grade Road in Thurman, North Carolina. Again, you can put it in your GPS. We're up I-77 north of Statesville. I take exit 83 because it's a straight shot, but the maps on the the signs on the interstate will take you off 85 because exit 83 is a left-hand exit. So,
how about social media? Facebook?
We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a website, www.jonesvondrell.com.
You want to spell that?
J-O-N-E-S. V-O-N-D-R-E-H-L-E.
Jones Von Drell, Vineyards and Winery. Okay, if we were to come to your place, what would we see?
We are down we're in a rural community, you know, and we are down a small rural road, old railroad grade road. It used to be the site of the line, the Elkin to Allegheny Railroad that was being built in the 1920s, so that's where it got its name. You're driving down this little road, and all of a sudden you hit this huge expanse of vineyard, because it's a 30-acre vineyard. And we take you in at the south gate. We take you down through and around the vineyard. You see our barrel bridge that we actually used barrels to construct. We have a huge lake. And then we take you up the hill to the winery and to the tasting room. Our patio overlooks the entire vineyard. So after you finish tasting in the tasting room, you can go out there and sit on the patio and enjoy the view, the mountains in the background, the vineyard out in front of you, great music. Chuck picks every song for our playlist.
This is the recorded music.
We use Rhapsody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have special events there?
We do. As I said, Sunday we did our North Carolina Artisan Fair and Cellar Club Pickup, and we had brought in North Carolina cheesemakers, the picklers, a mustard maker, bread makers, and we had Alpaca Farm who brought their wares. So we did that in association with our wine club pickup. The beginning of May, we did a farm-to-table, six-course, 140-person wine dinner out on the field. Yeah, we did in the field. We brought up a chef from Charlotte, Clark Barlow, the owner of Heirloom Restaurant, who is just going to be one of those chefs that we say we knew you when. Great chef. And it was a great dinner, even though the morning of that dinner, we got up, it was 58 degrees, and the wind was gusting. Now, this is the 1st of May. The wind was gusting at 15 to 20 miles an hour. So there were some challenges that day, but it really, really turned out well, and people came dressed well, so it was a great day.
Do you have wedding venues there?
We have not had a wedding there yet. We will do events, like we've had a rehearsal dinner, but we have not done a wedding there yet. We never do anything until we are ready to do it and know that we can do it well.
Absolutely. Good plan. And I'm assuming that you have like an event center or something like that where you have the dinners? Or is it all outside?
Outside. The future plan is to build a pavilion there, but, you know, we take one step at a time. You know, we started with the vineyard first, and then came the winery and the tasting room, and so.
So if we had a group of people, say, 3 or 4 versus 15 or 20, is there some reservations that we'd have to make an event?
We ask that groups over 8 make reservations with us. Can easily accommodate. We've had 90 people at a time come in there on a tour. We can usually fit about 40, 45 people around the bar. It's tight, but if they're part of that tour, they know each other. So, but yeah, we have a really nice, large tasting bar, and we're happy to have people. People who are interested in wine and serious about it.
Good European-style, French-style dry wines, primarily.
Correct.
All right. Well, Diana, we've been very pleased to have you visit us here today for our radio program. Sincerely, we'd love to have you come back in a couple of years and give us an update on all the new wonderful things and great new wines you could be producing out there. So thanks so much for taking time out of your day to come visit us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, folks, we've been talking today with Diana Jones, who is one of the owners of the Jones Vondrell Vineyards and Winery up in Thurman, North Carolina. And sounds like you can get her wines in a lot of places around this region, including Asheville. So let's give them a try and go on up and visit her place and tell us what you think. Okay, folks, we'll call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!